In yachting, precision is not a luxury. It is the difference between function and failure. Every weld, every joint, every engineered solution must perform, not just in theory, but at sea. Engineered Yacht Solutions delivers specialist welding, fabrication, and onboard engineering built for real-world conditions. This is craftsmanship shaped by experience, pressure, and exacting standards. Trusted by professionals who understand there is no margin for error. Engineered Yacht Solutions. Discover engineering without compromise. EYS, welding.com.
Already. Welcome back to Yachting USA, brother.
Thanks, man.
It's good to see you, Gary.
Awesome to be here.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I was excited that you were here today.
Thank you. Thank you. It was wonderful to see you, too. It was like, God, you know, you see some familiar faces. And like I was saying, we had this conversation going in Fort Lauderdale, and then we had to cut it short. Mm-hmm. And it was like, it was just kind of getting good.
It was getting to the meat of it, too. Yeah.
Where were we at? Well, you were talking about how your dad had visions for you to go one pathway. You got into boating through parasailing. And mm-hmm. And you, what I took away from what you shared with me, Carrie, mm-hmm. was that you set a goal. And if it took you 4 years to attain that goal, you were like, I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. And so instead of flitting around, you got into some, I think, commercial shipping of some type, before you got into yachts. And then, you know, your pathway eventually got you to where you got noticed, picked up by Bravo, and you started down that rabbit hole into below deck.
Which in itself was bizarre. I mean, really bizarre. You know, I don't think we kind of got into, like, how much I put into being a captain. And what that was, I was going to be blue collar. You know, my dad was a builder and I wanted to be an electrician to do something different to him. Yeah. And then we ended up on the parasailing boat. And then I did that job until the sea time for the next license was maximized. So it was, I think it was like 90 days, as much sea time as I could use on that boat towards 365.
Small increments.
But it maxes out because the boat was 12 meters.
Okay.
It didn't leave the bay.
Right.
To get your Masterclass 5, which would be equal to like a 200-ton ticket, maybe.
Yeah.
You had to have 365 days of sea time, but it couldn't all be in this one little bay.
Makes sense.
Right? Because you need
to be it's a big ocean.
All on that little boat.
Yeah. Well, how much can you learn in just that one spot?
Yeah. So it had to be, you know, only less than 24 meters was only 90 days. And then the rest had to be over 24 meters. And you could get a license for just the bay, but I didn't want that.
Right.
So I love my day job. So I did my day job all day. And then at night time, I would do like these night runs, we'd call it, to this island close by on a larger boat. So then I would count the nighttime sea time, not the daytime sea time. And that got to a point where it was maxed out. But I liked that job too.
Okay.
So then what I would do is I would start my day job, finish it at say 5 or 6. My night job started at 9 o'clock at night. Finished around 11. Then I'd go to a landing barge for no money that went outside of the bay. It took, I think it was like 3 hours to get to the destination and 3 hours to come back.
That's another 6 hours.
Yeah.
Leaves you 2 hours of sleep.
But then we've got to get there and we've got to unload the boat, right? So I would I'd sleep on the way back, I think I would, but not much sleep, maybe 3 or 4 hours sleep was all I'd get. But I would do the three jobs to get the sea time so I could get the license so I could work anywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And as time went on, I went to other places, different jobs around the country, and the last job I had before yachting was captain of that landing barge.
Okay.
That I used to work on for free.
Right. You're getting compensated for doing it.
To get my sea time, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and it was one of those moments, like an aha moment.
Yeah.
You know, it was pretty neat.
That is pretty neat.
Yeah.
So then segue us from commercial shipping, the sea barge, to your first gig where you're in a luxury vessel and you're now running something other than, you know, a commercial entity. What's that look like?
Yeah, so my very first job, you know, I had a pretty big license in Australia to be a captain. It was a Masterclass 4. And I also had an engineering license, which is called an MED2. And I would be captain engineer on most of the boats that I would run.
Right.
I'm just hanging out at a mate's house, having a cuppa. And, you know, my friends knew I wanted to get into yachting. My mentor said it was a terrible idea. He's like, you know, don't go do that. He's like, because he was old school Admiralty guy, right? And he's actually, my mentor was on the ferries, and then he went over and managed the landing barge, and he called me in.
Okay.
And so anyway, so I'm just, you know, he told me it's a stupid idea. I got you this job. It's an amazing opportunity you have, Kerry. Like, you deserve it, but I'm going to let you know that I'm taking care, you know.
Right.
And I'm just at a mate's house, and I get this phone call, and this guy's calling me, and he goes, I heard about you, and I've got a yacht in Canada, and I want you to come and be the engineer.
All right.
And I'd never spoken to a millionaire before, so I didn't know what they sound like.
Like you and I, right? Yeah, funny. Yeah. Right, right.
And all my friends knew that I love Canada. Everyone knew that I had this affection with the country. Like, when I was a kid, I would, like, write to the embassy and get brochures, and then when I could pick an assignment on a country, it'd always be Canada. So I would say the two things together, just, I thought someone was pulling my leg.
There you go.
And the owner was Aussie. And I'm kind of being careful, because if I fall into, all my mates would give me a hard time for life, mm-hmm. right? So I didn't want to get caught. I didn't want to get sucked in, but I didn't want
to
miss
out. To do it.
I didn't want to miss out on the job.
Right.
But I don't want to be sucked in if it's a false job, right? If it's a bunch of buddies next door laughing on a phone. And eventually the guy said, look, I'm not pulling your leg. It's a real job. Can you get here? And 2 weeks later, I'm in Canada.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was my
first. So you came on board as an engineer.
Came on board as an engineer, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
But that's usually its own pathway. You know, I talked to captains who started as, you know, deckhands, could become first mate, chief officer, and then captain. Mm-hmm. Rarely to hear about the engineers moving into the wheelhouse. Kind of leave the engineers in the back end of the boat, take care of the dirty stuff.
Well, the thing is, I was already an established captain in the commercial world.
Okay, yeah.
So that's a little different.
You had a ticket already.
So I did go through the process from deckhand. I mean, I've done, up until then, I've been a deckhand.
Right.
I've been a steward. I've been a cook.
All right.
And I've been a captain. I've been a dive boat captain. I've been a dredge operator. I've been a tugboat captain, landing barge, a water taxi.
That's pretty diverse.
I do fishing charters.
Right.
Sport fish boats, glass bottom boat driver on the, you know what I mean? Like, I've done so many things. So I came in as engineer, and what was cool about this boat is it was called Southern Cross 2.
Okay.
Southern Cross 2 was the chase boat in 1983 when Australia won the America's Cup. Which was a pretty big deal.
Yeah, you think? Well, I remember that clearly. Yes, yes.
Pretty big deal. So my very first yacht to have that heritage, you know, the guy Alan Bond didn't own it anymore, you know, but it was kind of cool. That was my first yacht. It was an Australian built boat there.
Yeah. Didn't Ted Turner lose that race to the Aussies?
No, it was not Ted Turner. It was,
sorry, Ted.
Yeah, not you, mate. You're okay. It was someone else.
Okay.
But it was because it was a Newport was the race.
Right.
That's where the race was at. I'm pretty sure it was a New York yacht club that lost it.
Yeah.
Which was like...
It was brutal.
Hadn't been lost in how long. And
yeah, I know. It's like unheard of.
Unheard of, right? And
right.
That's because you guys kept changing the rules, you know. So it worked out for you. And we found a way around it.
You got innovative.
But the most funniest thing, if you Google it, like Australian Prime Minister, America's Cup win, and you've got our Prime Minister, Bob Hawke, and he's there and he's got a beer in his hand. He's at an event and he's told that we won. And he's like this, and he was known that he could scull a beer. And he's like, tomorrow's a public holiday. We won, you know, we beat the Yanks. You know? And then A walks over to him and goes, yeah, you can't say that. And he's like, all right, well, tomorrow's not a public holiday. I was told that. But if your boss sacks you tomorrow, he's a bum. So you got to get so Aussie there.
I love that. I love that.
You're just so, you know.
You got to be a politician.
Yeah, but he was known. Like, he was known, like, at a horse race. You know, he'd, like, scull a beer. You know, he was just... Yeah.
He's a people's person.
Yeah. So that was my introduction into yachting, and it was Vancouver Island. We did a big refit. We repowered the boat, new generators, new transmissions, the whole thing.
We, a beautiful place to do it too.
Yeah. Gorgeous. We're in Philbrooks in mm-hmm. Vancouver Island.
Yep.
In Victoria, Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
And that was super neat. And we got going and we brought the boat down the west coast of North America through the Panama Canal. And up to Boston.
All right.
And the idea was the boat was going to go across the Atlantic and go all through Europe and eventually make its way to Australia.
Wow.
Going
almost, almost a circumnavigation then.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the plan. But then in Boston, I was enjoying the local people too much and I got in trouble and I got fired.
Ouch.
Yeah. But just lucky for me, on the way around, I'd made contacts and... I think a few weeks later, I was in Anacortes near Seattle.
I love Anacortes.
And I was the mate unofficial engineer of a brand new boat built by Northern Marine.
Bud Lemieux's company.
Sorry?
Bud Lemieux. That was
yes, Bud. Yes,
yeah, he's
yes,
a friend
yes,
of mine.
Bud, yeah,
I supplied a lot of equipment to Northern Marine and spent many a day up in Anacortes. Gorgeous. Up
yeah,
there.
Awesome, man. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Cool boat, too. Good ocean boat.
We were the first yacht that I built because everything else was, you know, the trawler design.
Right, yeah.
So we were the very first one, 130. Excellent boat. I mean, it was fantastic. Really good boat.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so I came on there as the mate. And I just wanted to learn how to, you know, understand the industry. It's different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was there 4 years. The owner was amazing. And
that's its own education.
You know, it was, yeah. So that's why I stayed so long. It was just a good owner. Did I want to be the captain? Yeah, I did. But I'm like, you know, he couldn't teach me seamanship, but he could teach me how the finer things of service, you know, even little things down to, which I wouldn't have thought of before,
mm-hmm.
is how you berth a vessel for guest enjoyment. Where I'll be like, okay, the best way, with weather coming, I'm going to stern in and have the bow out to the bay.
Right.
No, we want to look, we want to see the bay. We don't want to stare at the dock.
Right.
Right. And okay. then it all changes to the owner, right? So years later, I was on a boat and they wanted to be seen all the time. So now,
so now
we stern to, you know,
right,
so
right.
You get to learn what your owner wants.
Yeah, that's important.
Yeah.
Right. Wow. And you mentioned that, you know, you weren't getting the seamanship part, but from the sound of all of your previous experience, you got the seamanship
had that
covered, right?
Yeah.
It's the finer nuances of service and you know, the white boat type of thing that,
yes.
Right, which is so important.
Yeah.
So how does that translate then to having a network like Bravo reach out and say, hey, we want a captain and we want to do something different?
Yes, yes.
You know, you've heard all the conversations about that, so we don't need to cover that ground so much. But it is interesting that you get into that space.
Mm-hmm.
What does it look like? And how does that work with what you've been doing or what the typical captain role looks like?
So I never wanted to be on TV. There was never
right.
anything I wanted to do. And if I was to say I was a huge fan of this show, I'd be lying.
Fair enough.
I was very much initially, this, you know, yachting's about not showing what happens below deck.
Right,
yachting's
right.
about, you know, bringing in an amazing meal or pulling off an incredible experience without seeing the sweat and blood and tears that created it, right?
That's like right. How the sausage is being made.
Exactly. You know, right. you know, well, we'd say in Australia, lifting the skirt. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I wasn't a massive fan at all. And I had some friends that went on the show and, you know, they did their thing and so forth. And the way it started for me is, you know, my marriage broke down. I went into severe depression. I gave up yachting. You know, the biggest boat I run was 290. And I gave everything up to work on myself, get my head straight.
Mm-hmm.
I was even painting houses in Palm Beach. And then when I started getting my head back together, I took on a job, like a really small boat. It was just like a 45-foot boat during COVID, which was amazing, where, you know, I was just tearing around Florida and the Bahamas during COVID. It was pretty cool.
It was a cool time.
Yeah. But I wanted to save my marriage. And my wife, you know, she had been unfaithful, but I still wanted to get past it for the kids.
Right, right.
But she just wasn't in sound mind, you know, and she had kind of, her narrative had flipped in her head. And I'd come from being like a controlling husband to a submissive husband. So she filled the void of where I was.
She had to take on your masculine energy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then so she brought up all this, you know, 10 years of frustration.
Ah.
Right. So here I am trying to be subservient and like, I get it, you know, let's work through this. I want this to work. And then her narrative to her work friends would support whatever decision she was making. So I haven't told the story before because out of respect for my ex-girlfriend at the time, and that'll be clearer in a second. So I remember always talking to my friend that was on below deck and all her friends thought it was really cool.
Like right, that, right.
You know, and I didn't think much of it. And I actually applied for below deck to get my wife's attention.
How'd that work?
Well, I mean, let's just take a breath and think about that. Like, I haven't really thought up to depth. Mm-hmm. I mentioned to a friend of mine a week ago, you know, a guy I've known for a long time, but we haven't connected until that night. And he's like, hang on a second here. you went on, I mean, not just to get her attention, you went on the biggest show on TV, you know.
Right.
The number one franchise and the captain, like of all the things you could do to get, I mean, he's like, that's incredible. And I'm like, at the time, man, I just wanted to keep my family.
Right.
And that's the reason I applied, was so that her friends would see me on TV and say, why wouldn't you give him a shot?
I love it.
Okay. You know, like he really wants, like, he wants to be with you.
Right.
That's, are you crazy?
That's your man.
You know, and that's why I applied for the show. But things take time, right? Interviews, and then COVID happened, and it took time until we started filming. And I missed the boat. So by the time I started filming, I was divorced.
Okay.
And I was in a new relationship.
All right.
Hence why I haven't told the story that way.
Right, right.
I don't, you know what I mean? But then I've got there, and I'm in Norway, and I've arrived, and I'm like, why am I here? Like, I'm here because for my ex-wife.
Right. And that doesn't resonate anymore because it's not there anymore.
Yeah. And then I looked around, I saw how beautiful the place was, and I'm like, well, I'm here now.
Okay.
Absolutely. You know, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's do that. So
how many seasons did you do with Bloodhack?
So I've done... I've done three seasons. I did Below Deck Adventure was the first one in Norway, and they didn't pick that up another season. And then they needed a replacement for Lee. So 2 years later, they called me up. I didn't apply for that one. They called me and said, hey, would you like to take over from Lee? And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, this is the man, right?
Captain
like,
Lee,
you
right.
know, and oh my God, I can't believe that you're asking me to, of all the captains that are out there,
right, right.
Why would you ask me to do that? And I felt very, you know, grateful and gracious for that opportunity. And I've done two seasons since then, have been put on TV, and then we have another season upcoming. So,
awesome.
So yeah,
I like that's a great story.
Yeah.
So I'll leave the whole conversation about what really happens on Below Deck for others. It's interesting, but it's not. So other people like to get into that. I'm curious, really, about. You went through a really hard time and struggled with depression.
Mm-hmm.
What was your salvation? What did you do? And mm-hmm. I say this in the context of having dealt with my own PTSD through my own loss in my life and you know, having to navigate those waters.
Yes.
And I talk about that to those who want to listen because I think it's important. And so when you bring up the fact that, you know, depression, you're grieving a mm-hmm. loss, you know, mm-hmm. and you,
yes.
the grief is heavy because the love was so heavy.
Yes.
You know, and that's the thing that took me a little bit of time to connect to is why does it fucking hurt so badly? And then you realize it's because the love is so intense.
Yeah.
And so how does a man wake up one morning and go, okay, this is where I'm at. I don't want to be in this space. Mm-hmm. How do you fix it? How do you change it?
Mm-hmm. It's a great question. Like for me, I didn't sleep for a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what is when I found out that she'd been unfaithful was what hit me. And then you have a movie in your head of your life. Everything is gone. Everything that you make up these stories of just the family broken, and it's overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing I did was I cut alcohol straight away, like instantly. You know, I mean, I couldn't sleep, I couldn't eat. I just,
right.
you know, as it was. And I knew that wasn't going to help me.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't.
And I started exercising straight away. Good. I was up in the Hamptons when I found out.
All right.
And I seeked a support system.
Good.
Yeah. Which is very important. Actually, my crew helped me so much. Like, it was unbelievable. Like, they, you know, I had a yogi. One of my crew was a bit of a yogi. I'm like, teach me meditation.
Second family.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, like, teach me meditation. And then, you know, she showed me a bit, and I thought meditation would take my mind away from my problems. Well, I found out it's quite the opposite.
It is.
So that's a lot to lean into.
Yep.
And I just kind of, I don't know what part of me decided to take that path versus drinking and blaming the world.
Yeah.
I just took accountability. I dug deep. I wanted to find out. I still wanted to save the relationship. What have I got to save it? You know, therapy. I got on medication because I needed it, and I wasn't shy that I needed the medication. And that's, I think it's very important. It's there for a good reason.
Right, right.
So, you know, I wanted antidepressants. But at the same time, you know, like I'd have like Xanax to help me through times, which is like an instant kind of help.
Right.
But I learned, look, once the other pills had helped and got my system and got caught up, I really would back off the Xanax and kind of learn to feel what's going on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's there for a reason, right? Yeah. It's a break glass and it's there for a reason, but I would then start learning about my mind and understanding. You know, I started doing self-development courses and understanding how the brain works, and I would do these different retreats to try to, you know, just recalibrate everything, because as you know, your whole world has changed and you didn't expect it to happen.
Yeah.
And I internalized. And and to be honest,
we all do that.
Yeah, yeah. And not blame the world, but to be honest, it, you know, my healing, I'm still healing. And
you will be.
I will,
absolutely.
And I if I look back at things, I thought I was more healed than what I was when I started my next relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, maybe in a year or two, I'll be ready to talk about that one.
Yeah.
But, you know, history repeated itself. So I got to kind of look at what in me attracted that situation.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah.
And then, but also the thing I did too, mate, was I changed my mindset where I didn't want to be the smartest man in the room anymore. I want to be around people that I could learn from.
There's wisdom in that.
Yeah.
You put your ego aside a little bit and then put yourself in a place where others can, you know, bring something to you. And yeah, I think there's huge amount of value in that.
Yeah, my ego, I buried that. And the needle went too far. Like I went on, like I call the Captain Kerry apology tour. And I think of all the crew members I didn't have compassion for, you know, when they needed me to. And, you know, I look back at, you know, exit interview, you know, I would just, if I defy you or you were leaving for a reason that I didn't think was good enough, I would let you know you let me down.
Yeah.
Like you would leave feeling shit.
That's human nature, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the captain and, you know, and how dare you leave my command? That's, you know, unacceptable.
Yeah. Unless it was a good reason, but there really was never a good reason. All right.
Well,
And there's people that really gel with my style of captaining, but there's a lot more that didn't.
Yeah. No, so, I get that.
So I actually went out of my way to apologize to people.
That's strong. That is huge.
Yep.
And that is the self-work that we do. And I totally understand that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I took a slightly different pathway. I got in with some very good friends who helped me through some hard times and got introduced to some plant-based medicine work that... Mm-hmm. Amazingly set things more clear. Talk about the way the brain works and how we think and, you know, how we get in this rut. And so I've had so many conversations with people that have gone through trauma, whether it's divorce or death, major losses. Sometimes even in business, you're so connected to the outcome of your business and all of a sudden it doesn't work that way.
Oh,
or it fails.
It
can be devastating. And yeah, so I found that therapy has been fantastic because it's not an ongoing everyday type of thing. It's something you do and then you integrate and maybe you go back to it months later and you integrate from that and you create clarity in almost everything. Mm-hmm. And so I'm becoming more comfortable talking about that because I think there's so many people that benefit from understanding different pathways you can take for healing, and that's what we really want. If you have experienced great loss, then you need great healing.
Absolutely.
And sometimes it's just two buds having conversation. You can sit down and talk and get vulnerable with each other and be real about what's going on, mm-hmm. hold each other accountable, you know, give each other a hug at the end of it. What I've learned is that some of these podcasts I do where we go down these rabbit holes,
mm-hmm.
and some of the things that I'll put out there and my social media, like a 3 or 4 minute little monologue talking about grief or talking about whatever.
Yep.
Being vulnerable.
Yes.
The feedback I get is, oh my God, Rick, more.
Yeah.
Would you give me more?
Yeah.
Well, I need to hear this. I need to hear more of this. I was walking the docks during the Palm Beach Boat Show. I had 3 people from 3 different parts of the world come up and say, love what you're doing. Please don't stop.
Yeah.
The feedback is like, no, it's generous, you know.
And you're getting the conversation started, and that's the...
Right,
you know,
right.
You know, we've got similar paths. You know, I've started Mental Health Mondays, and I don't know if you've seen that at all.
No, I'd like to see it.
Yes, every Monday I do a post, Mental Health Mondays, and I film it when I'm in a bad headspace.
Okay.
And I talk about my tools I use to get out of it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's you know, it's short. You know, it might be, you know, I might talk about pausing. Like, you know, you just pause. Like, you don't to make a decision right now.
Right.
You know, and, you know, things will pass, or just get out, go for a walk. And I've been doing it for the last couple of years, and I just haven't, or I don't have my equipment. And when I think about it, and I was in Beijing a few weeks ago, and I was chatting with, you know, someone there that knows me, and, you know, it was Charlie Guest for my first season. That's why I was there. And I'm talking, she said, why don't you do that? I said, you're right, I should. I went back to my hotel room, put my iPhone and put some things behind it to hold it in place. I had no mics, nothing, and I just pressed record.
Yeah, I've done
said, that. And I said, welcome to Mental Health Mondays. I said, you can come on the journey with me. You know, every Monday I'm going to release a different one, and, you know, let's get the conversation started. And you know, we show we're vulnerable,
right?
Which then allows other people to access that too.
That's right.
And, you know, it's... I don't do it in a way that is sad. I do it in a way that is inspiring.
Good.
You know, and I get people messaging, like, I needed that today.
Yep.
You know, it's the same thing, right?
When I started, I thought maybe if I'm helping one person, then it's worth it.
Yeah.
And then I get dozens of people feeding back going, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's not one person. It's a lot of one persons.
It's a lot. And then that one person, everyone around them feels that change in them, that energy change. So you're helping those people.
Or they'll repost what I put out there.
Yeah.
And that's when you really know it's like, okay, it's multiplying. It's organically growing in its content. So, no, people that know me, and I love what I do in the yachting space and Yachting International Radio, Rhea has been a wonderful producer. She's very supportive of these conversations. And I tell people they're not for everybody, but they're for people that need it. And I truly believe that people that need it hear it when they need to hear it.
I agree. I've had a lot of trauma, you know, and more I talk about my, you know, I was molested as a child and everything that come behind that. And then what you feel is safe and what's making me make certain decisions that put me in a relationship status with a certain person that is not healthy for me.
Right.
You know what I mean? And why do I keep doing it? And it's, and what the doctor was telling me, and I love about it, and so what you're talking about too, is these experiences made me who I am today.
That's right.
You know, I am a product of those experiences.
Right.
We don't want to change that. What we want to do is you are who you are today because of your experiences, but we want you to be that person without the baggage.
Right.
So you can get in there, look at it, identify what my attachment style is because of those life experiences, and now I can have a new relationship with that experience.
And your path has put you into the public domain to where tens of thousands of people hear your voice, maybe millions even.
Millions. I mean, just in the US.
Right.
Each episode is millions there, and then it's broadcast all over the world, and it's on airplanes, and it's
exactly.
It's everywhere, yeah.
What I've learned is the more I've done this, the more I've attracted way more than I've repelled.
Yes.
You know, and I think that is the beauty in this, that we are able to use our experiences, put it out there, and let other people receive it and figure out what to do with it. But know that, holy shit, this guy, Kerry, he's had such a history, such a challenging life.
Yeah.
Rick has gone through all of that, and look at these guys.
Yeah.
You know, they seem happy.
Yeah.
So that, I think, gives hope to people that are hopeless, that they can't come out of their funk or they can't get through this hard time they're going through.
Yes.
That, you know what? Yeah, you can.
You can. And that's why, we can be vulnerable about where we were at certain, vulnerable and honest of where we were at certain points. And someone out there is in that exact same place. You can see that there is a way out. And what's more important is teaching those tools on how to get out of that funk.
Yeah.
And, you know, a big thing is too, is you can't think your way out of it. You know what I mean? You can't think your way out of where you're at. You know, we could like do a deep dive on how, you know, recognize what your body's doing and, you know, your nervous system and your sympathetic nervous system and what's going on. And then where the chemicals are going in your brain and where you think in the back of your head and nothing good comes from that other than running away from a bear.
Right.
I don't like using the word broken or fucked in the head. It's better. It's just you're a product of what's happened.
Yeah, exactly.
And then that's just the and you are you and you respond to things a certain way because that is your world and your world is real. And when you get to a place where you can start recognizing what the body's doing and you start feeling tight in the chest, you know, and you can identify what that means to you, then you can kind of look at like, okay, this is how I feel right now. But the emotion there isn't to teach you what to do, it's to teach you where you are.
Right.
So if you realize that you're in a fear-based state, you realize you're highly stressed.
Yeah.
Most likely you're using the back of your brain to do the thinking. And everything it's thinking is bullshit right now.
Yeah, that's you the know? Reptilian side of your brain, the exactly. fight or flight part of
exactly,
it.
Exactly, right. And then, which has a purpose, but maybe not right now
that's right.
in this situation. So, you know, learning what by breathing exercises and mm-hmm. A thought can only last 90 seconds unless you fuel it, right? So you get yourself in that fear-based state, you start freaking out, you start getting mad about what's just happened. And if you can do some breathing exercises that take your mind off it for 90 seconds, then it's stopped. And now the thought process comes back to the front of the brain.
That's right.
But then 2 seconds later, it goes back. And then you feel it in the chest and you go, okay, I want to do my breathing cycle.
Go back into that.
And then you can start getting
you
your
just
way
brought
out
up something that's so important. And the breathing is so essential to understand what that is and how it works.
Wild, huh?
It is. And that's part of my journey as well, is to get into breath work. Mm-hmm. And to get into the opportunity when you feel that tightness going up and you know that it's the bad thing that's happening, to be able to go.
Yeah.
And just that enough is the pause that you need to start re-regulating.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a shame it's taken me a freaking lifetime to get to the point where I could understand and integrate that into how I deal day to day. But
got it now.
You get there, right?
You got it now, and you're able to tell people about it.
That's right. I love it. So, Kara, we have to make a commitment to each other, brother, that in the months and years to come, we check in and we see how we're doing.
Yeah, man.
And as we get more comfortable in these conversations, you know, these conversations continue, because I think there's a lot of people who will listen to this and will greatly benefit. Yeah.
Thanks for having me on, mate.
Awesome. Gary, what a treat to reconnect and spend this Saturday afternoon in Miami with your brother.
Yeah.
This is good. So until next time, we're out of here.
See ya.
If your brand belongs in the heart of the yachting world, this is where it happens. Yachting International Radio reaches over 1 million yachting professionals and enthusiasts every month with 77 million impressions, 220,000 social followers, and 74,000 podcast subscribers. Our hosts are insiders, crew, captains, CEOs, trusted voices shaping the industry. This is targeted, high-impact advertising in a luxury niche. Visit yachtinginternationalradio.com/advertise. Your audience is already listening.